Let's get the view from Seattle from the guy who's one of our returning champs. Does an awesome job covering it all for ESPN 710. Check it out online, 710sports.com. On Twitter, it's at the B Gustafson, Brandon Gustafson, BG. Always great catching up. How are you doing these days?
Doing great. Draft week, like you said, only 2 days away. We're full swing with the Mariners season, so a lot of cool stuff going on.
You know, a couple of thoughts on the Seahawks and the likelihood they're going to, well, have a limited role because of factors, you know, the Jamal Adams, the Carlos Dunlap trades. They only have picks right now in rounds 2, 4, and 7. So, with some of the off-season signings, Brandon, and even according to your own Matt Miller, logical to think that they're really not going to make any big moves to add selections and more likely than not just play this hand?
So the thing with the Seahawks that you have to understand is that since John Schneider, the team's GM, since he came to Seattle back in 2010 with Pete Carroll, the fewest amount of picks that they've ever made in a draft is 8. Right? So
right.
They love to wheel and deal at the draft. Typically, if they have a first-round pick, sometimes they trade down a few spots to add more picks. Sometimes they trade out of the first round completely. This year, because like you mentioned with that Jamal Adams trade, they don't have that luxury. They only have the 3 picks right now. I don't see any way, unless they start trading off veteran players, for them to get to that kind of 8-pick mark. But I do see them trading out of the second round, maybe getting like a 3rd and a 5th from somebody, something like that. I think a good estimate would be that they make about 5-6 picks, but it sounds like, and it's not just with the Seahawks, but just across the league, because of the COVID-19 pandemic with some players opting out, some guys didn't play a whole lot, like here in the Pac-12. Some guys only played 4 or 5 games, something like that. So it was just a harder year to evaluate talent. So if there's any year for the Seahawks to enter a draft with only 3 picks, I guess this is as good as any.
You know, it's the offseason, I would say, limited movement as far as trades or free agency, but they extended Tyler Lockett. They re-signed up front Dunlap Maioa. They brought back Chris Carson, plus their starting center, Ethan Posick. So while not earth-shattering, how important were those moves to, you know, provide some stability because it's still a really good team?
Yeah, they were a really talented team last year, and honestly, you know, they lost to the Los Angeles Rams in the playoffs. I think that the Seahawks were the more talented team, and a lot of that is quarterback, right? You're going to take Russell Wilson over Jared Goff 7 days, you know, every single day of the week, you're going to take Russell Wilson over Jared Goff. But, they had a really talented core last year. They were able to bring back basically everybody. The only starter who hit the market that they haven't brought back is K.J. Wright, and in a way, as much as the team would probably like to have K.J. Wright back, they drafted Jordan Brooks, a linebacker from Texas Tech in the first round last year. He played really well. They have some linebacker depth from recent drafts. So, yeah, they've had a pretty good, quiet offseason, especially with all of the Russell Wilson trade rumor stuff that got kind of blown out of proportion. He's still here up in Seattle. They have a new offensive coordinator who he played a hand in hiring. They ended up getting some more talented players like Gerald Everett, the tight end from the Rams. They re-signed some of their own guys. So, yeah, they go into this draft with only 3 picks, but they really don't have a ton of holes. There's really only 2 or 3 spots on this team that I could see them really needing to address during the draft.
Talking with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle. And for the fans listening, the Seattle fans, seriously, 710sports.com, so much good content. Brandon, we've talked about the Mariners' expectations, and right now the bottom line, if Oakland hadn't gone on that 13-game winning streak, I mean, Seattle leads the West. So in general, any reason to be less than pleased with how this young team has gotten out of the gate?
No, it's been fun to watch. You know, they're going to have their young team moments. They've had a few 1-0 losses where they only get 1 or 2 hits, things like that. They played the Dodgers. Julio Urias just totally shut them down for only 1 hit. It was an infield single. Zach Greinke pitched a 1-inning shutout. He threw 8 scoreless. So they're going to have those moments. The good thing to see is the top of the lineup with Mitch Haniger, Ty France, Kyle Seager, now Kyle Lewis. That's been really productive. The big issue with the lineup is just really a lack of length from that 5 to 9 spot. It's been pretty inconsistent. A lot of guys hitting under 200. Starting rotation kind of needs to pick it up a little bit. Marco Gonzalez, who has been one of the more reliable pitchers in MLB the last 2-3 seasons, he had 2 rough starts in his first 2 outings, but he's picked it up the last 2 games. They lost James Paxton, unfortunately. Sounds like he's getting season-ending surgery. It's unclear whether it's Tommy John or not, but he's not expected back. So the rotation's been a little bit inconsistent, but the biggest surprise for me has been the bullpen. They've had a part of something that always happens with rebuilding teams most of the time is that the bullpen's kind of the last thing that you tool up, right? And it's usually pretty bad during those rebuilding years, and we've seen that the last two seasons. But this year, they've been one of the better bullpens in MLB, honestly. It's really surprising. Kendall Graveman has been a really nice surprise. He's somebody that they signed to be a starter last year. He ended up going on the injured list with a back injury. He had a benign tumor in his spine. They brought him back this season. They made him a full-time reliever, and he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, reliever or not. It's been fun to see. So, yeah, some highs, some lows, kind of what you expect with a young team. But as you mentioned, if it weren't for the A's just going on an absolute tear, I mean, this is a team that's probably two or three games up in the AL West almost a month into the season. I don't think a whole lot of people were expecting that.
You know, I wanted to follow up on Kendall Graveman because, you know, people hear about him maybe for the first time and realize he is 30 years old. Not only you mentioned they found a bone tumor, he had Tommy John surgery, and now for the first time ever, he's coming exclusively out of the bullpen. You wrote about it. He went to Mississippi State. I mean, what about him, you know, for those who haven't seen him very much, what do you like and what are you seeing?
There's a lot to like with Kendall Graveman, man. He's full-on attack mode when he comes out of the bullpen. He's somebody who can throw multiple innings. He's got a three-pitch mix. He throws a really hard sinker fastball. He's averaging about 97, 98 on that. He's touched 99 a few times. He has a really tight slider, cutter. It's usually in the high 80s, low 90s. Most of his strikeouts have come on that. And went back when he was a starter, that was his third pitch. He's got a good changeup as well, but he just comes out of the bullpen. He's in attack mode. You're going to get two, three-plus pitches out of him, and most relievers, they typically only have one, and the really good guys typically have two, but it's a guy with starting pitching-type weapons, but he just comes out of the gate, he fires a lot of strikes, and he's going to keep this team in a lot of ball games, or, you know, shut the door on a team, potentially, if they have the lead. So it's been cool, and it sounds like he's somebody who's really taken a leadership role, not just with the relievers, but with the starting pitching. So both on the field and off the field, sounds like he's been just an absolute steal for the Mariners so far.
You know, when we talked last month, we hit on an interesting point. When you've got a really good player who misses a whole season and he comes back, it's like signing a good free agent. And you mentioned Mitch Haniger. His only full season really was 2018, and he was an all-star. Just, Brandon, how nice has it been for Scott Servais to, you know, write him in at the top of the lineup every day and then address, you know, mostly other issues?
Yeah, Mitch has been fantastic, and that's so good to see because, like you mentioned, he's only had the one fully healthy year back in 2018. Yeah, he's an all-star. He was a top 10 MVP candidate, and that was a really good Mariners team. They won, I think, 89 games that year, just missed out on the playoffs, but he was their best player. And that was a team that had Nelson Cruz on the last year of his deal. They still had Kyle Seager. Robinson Cano, that was the year he got popped for PEDs, but when he was playing, he still had a really good season. Gene Segura was an all-star that year, I believe, so he has a bunch of talent. It's just he's been really unlucky with some really unfortunate injuries. He had a setback with an injury heading into last season, so he missed all of 2020. He had like three surgeries in less than 6 months or something like that. But yeah, he's a five-tool guy. He's somebody who plays really good defense in right field. He has an absolute cannon for an arm. He's probably not as fast as he used to be, but he's still got decent speed, and in the field he's got good closing speed. But at the plate, he can kind of do it all. He hits for average. He's able to work counts. He works his walks. He has his strikeouts like a lot of power guys do, but that's not super uncommon, especially with just how good pitching is in today's MLB. But works for high average, and that's the kind of guy that you want leading off games for you. And this is a team that, as we've mentioned, really young. A lot of really young position players, and he's someone who kind of just goes about his business, leads by example. And, yeah, Scott Servais has made it no secret. He is thrilled to be able to write number 17 into the lineup each and every game.
Few final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 Seattle. Early last week on Twitter with your pal Brent Stecker, we were all singing the praises of Evan White at first base. And I said, I got to live in New York in the 80s where there were Keith Hernandez and Don Mattingly. And I think this guy is just unbelievable. And obviously, look at the numbers. He needs to start hitting. But, you know, what's the buzz about his play at first and, you know, how that kind of solidifies the infield?
Yeah, I mean, he's a gold glover as a rookie, and there are some really good defensive infielders in the American League. Even in the American League West, Yuli Gurriel's a pretty good defensive first baseman. Matt Olson for the Oakland A's, he's a really good defensive first baseman as well. But Evan White is just otherworldly at first base. It's really fascinating to see. He has ridiculous range, his instincts, his hands, just everything. He seems to scoop up everything. If you're an infielder and you throw it near the guy, he's going to stretch it and scoop it, and that's not super common. First base isn't typically seen as a position of defensive strength, but this guy's otherworldly. You know, the scouting tool grade is 20 to 80, with 80 being elite, elite. He's typically seen as 70, 75, 80 grade glove, and he makes over-the-shoulder catches out in foul territory that some guys are just never going to make in their wildest dreams, and he makes seemingly one of those every 2 or 3 weeks. So he's a lot of fun to watch over there, and that gold glove last year, very well deserved. He's probably going to have a lot more of those when it's all said and done, but yeah, he's got a hit. The good thing is he's being more aggressive this year. Last year he was pretty timid. He got himself into a lot of 1-2, 0-2 counts, and then he would expand the zone and he'd chase, and I think he struck out almost 50% of the time last year. He's cut that down a lot. He hasn't really had the success yet. He's still hovering a little under 200, but he's got a lot of pop. He's somebody that they still think very highly of. He hit really well in the minor leagues. But, yeah, the bat's got to catch up to the glove at some point.
Got to get to center field, and we know Kyle Lewis was the 2020 Rookie of the Year. Started this season on the DL. Taylor Trammell manned the position, but, you know, he was hitting .160. And then Lewis took back over, I think, in the last game of the Dodger series. Got a couple of hits at Fenway on Saturday, homered yesterday. So what's the word about, you know, getting off the good start, but, you know, getting their guy back in center and in the middle of the order?
Yeah, that's been huge, especially because, as I mentioned, the top of the lineup early this year with Haniger, Ty France, and Kyle Seager, they've been the conductors, you know, when they're, but they were really the only three that were doing much of anything for most of the season until Kyle Lewis came back. Every once in a while, you'd get one, maybe two other guys in the bottom half of the lineup chipping in, but a lot of times, if there weren't guys on base for the first three guys in the order, the Mariners typically weren't getting a whole lot of runs. But it's nice to have Lewis back. He really extends that lineup out. He puts together quality at-bats. He's got big-time power, huge pull power, but as we saw yesterday, dead center at Houston, that's no easy feat. He lets the ball travel really well. He can go the opposite way. We saw that a lot last year. And he's willing to just take those singles to right field if it's given to him when guys are shifting over. So that's really nice to see. They have some young guys like Jared Kelnick, their top prospect, waiting in the wings, waiting for his opportunity. So the lineup has definitely gotten a lot longer with Kyle Lewis back. And ideally, some of these other guys pick up the slack going forward, so that way it's not just those top four guys doing all the damage day in and day out.
You know, lastly, a guy we haven't mentioned, Chris Flexen, who spent the start of his career struggling with the Mets. They cut him. He ended up in Korea. He got signed to kind of a little two-year deal. I guess this would be more of a show-me season. And he's, you know, he had the one rough start, looked great against the Bo Sox. So, Brandon, what's the book on him and how he's, you know, really stepped up to this opportunity?
Yeah, during the offseason, looking at the starting rotation before the Mariners made any moves, that it left a lot to be desired, and there were a lot of big names on the market. They did end up bringing James Paxton back, but that was after they signed Chris Flexen. So when they signed Chris Flexen initially, a lot of people were like, "Who is this guy? You're giving us a guy who has like a career 6-something ERA with the Mets. He just went over and pitched in Korea. There are far more established names out there. And this is the guy that we get," but he's been great. You know, the one start he had, I think the hiccup was in Minnesota, but other than that, he's been really solid. He's 2-1, sub-3 ERA. He's going deep into games. He's only allowed one home run. He's only walked 5. So he's keeping the ball in the ballpark. He's throwing a ton of strikes, and that's just something that, unfortunately, a lot of the other guys in that rotation haven't done a great job of. Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, they've had some issues with walks and things like that, but Chris Flexen's a guy who right now, you're giving him the ball and you're expecting him to go 6 innings, maybe even 7, give up 1 to 3 runs and just kind of keep you in a ball game. And for any manager, that's huge. But yeah, he was kind of an unsung hero so far. He's not somebody that a lot of guys are talking about, but really, he's probably been their best offseason move.
And as a Yankees fan, trust me, I enjoyed every minute of his 7 innings and shutting down the Red Sox. So, folks, he's Brandon Gustafson, does an terrific job covering Seattle sports, 710 ESPN online, 710sports.com. Follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at TheBGustafson. Brandon, always fun, always great information. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the draft, and obviously look forward to catching up soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.
All right,
appreciate it.
Take it easy.